My name is Daniel Shoptaw, an Arkansas accountant with a love for the Cardinals. I spent a lot of years watching the game before deciding to write about it. Now I express my thoughts and opinions at C70 at the Bat, part of the Cardinal Conclave. His name is Dan Buffa, a former Busch Stadium scoreboard operator with a passion for the game. His writing talents can be found throughout the internet on a variety of topics, including movies and anything St. Louis. You'll find him often bleeding out words at stlouissportsminute.com. Every week, we pool our knowledge and our opinions to create this podcast. Together, we are the best Dans in baseball. Welcome into episode 10 of Best Dans in Baseball. I'm Daniel Shoptaw. That's Dan Buffa. We're recording this Friday night, the 14th of August. We've just seen Jaime Garcia pitch yet another gem of a game, getting within two outs of a complete game, shutout. Dan, let's just start off with Jaime, because why not? We don't have a set standard here. We're just going to do whatever we want to do.
Who cares? We have no agenda. We just do whatever we want.
We got a few people to talk about, but there's particular order. We'll do it that way. Jaime, looking at 2015, and of course, you had the late start to the season. You have the gap in between June and July where he didn't pitch. So he's not pitched as much as maybe you'd like. He's pitched more than he has in a lot of years, so I guess you can't complain. So far this year, one time has he given up four runs, and one of those was unearned. Twice that game and one other game has he given up three runs. He's given up a total of 14, well, this is before tonight, so I guess he got credited for the one. He's given up 15 runs this season. Lance Lynn did that in one inning, didn't he?
It's just ridiculous what he's doing. I mean, when he's on, he seems to be the guy that just, he snaps hitters' bats in half. He gets a lot of grounders. He gets a lot of awkward swings. He just kind of seems to, he's not dying off. I mean, he's had, I think in 9 of his 11 starts, he hasn't even thrown 100 pitches in 9 of his 11 starts. He just doesn't need a lot of pitches. And, he's got like seven innings or more where he's gone deep into games. And it just doesn't seem to matter where he does it. He's equally good on the road and home against any team. It doesn't really matter. It was kind of good to see him go out there tonight against Miami, a team that he kind of, that he took his second fall of the season on when he was running the bases. He just came out tonight and shut down a team that's not good, but also a team that did 1-3 in a row. I mean, they beat up on the Red Sox a little bit. They've been scoring some runs even without Giancarlo Stanton. But, six strikeouts, a walk, six hits. He only seems to hurt himself. The other team has a pretty hard problem of getting any contact with his 191 opposing batting average. I mean, they just don't seem to get any line drives. They don't seem to do much off this guy. His worst start is arguably where he only went five innings against Colorado, but even then, he allowed one earned run. The only time that he really gets into trouble is when he walks people, and it was good to see him only walk one, because in back-to-back starts before this, he'd walk four. But really, even then, he just doesn't allow a lot. I mean, even that one game where he allowed four, it was only three earned. I mean, he hasn't allowed more than three earned runs in a start all year. And four, like you said, 14 runs. I mean, the guy's just being very stingy. And as I just wrote, I think it just posted, I mean, I think he's the most important guy in this rotation come playoffs, just because of how versatile and how nasty he can be.
Yeah, I mean, this is it is interesting to see what he does, what he brings to this team. Again, I think we still, even though we've seen relatively good health out of him, I think we still hold our breaths. It's hard to say he's going to be part of that postseason rotation because we just keep waiting for a shoe to drop. But if it doesn't, if he is healthy, you're right. I mean, he's a nasty, nasty thing to try to deal with. He gave up six hits tonight, but I mean, he's given up low amount of hits. He doesn't walk guys. His ERA is 1.57 right now after tonight's outing. That's fairly much insane.
That kind of needs to improve, Shoptaw. I mean, I'm not even sure that's even like worthy of a of a that's a good job. I think he's a little bit short of a gold star, if you ask me.
you'd like to say, wow, 157, that's the best in the rotation. It is the best in the rotation, but not by much. It's not like, wow, he's just setting the bar real high. It's like, no, he's just kind of in there with everybody else.
Yeah.
This not only does it mean, hey, who do you leave out of the postseason rotation if he's healthy, because obviously he's going to be in, but then you start looking, and I know we've kind of talked about this, and I know this is still a long way out, but the more he pitches like this, you start looking at that $11.5 million option for next year, and the Cardinals have a lot of pitching. It's very difficult to see where he fits in, but it's also hard to say, hey, $11.5 million is a bargain for what you're getting. Can you risk throwing that away? Now, you also wonder if maybe the Cardinals would exercise that option and then try to trade him. But the more he does this, the more that really seems like, even if you're going to offer a pitcher a qualifying offer, which you wouldn't be able to do here for Garcia, but a qualifying offer is 13 or 14 million, you're still getting him for less than that. What do you do?
I mean, I think I've always said this. If he can just finish the season healthy and give us and keep doing what he's doing, I mean, I think he's well worth that option. I think he, unlike John Lackey, who I think is going to be harder to bring back, Jaime Garcia still has to prove that he can, throw 30 starts in a season, and it's not going to happen this year. So I think he's going to be handcuffed. The Cardinals could always throw away that option, maybe like restructure his contract, maybe just make it. Add a couple of years, but maybe add some incentives. Maybe say, okay, if you pitch 32 starts in 2016, you automatically get that contract for 2017. It kicks in. You can do something like that. But at the very least, I think if he can just stay healthy the rest of the year and make 19 to 20 starts and do what he's doing, I think he's a bargain. 11.5. People don't understand that the Cubs are paying Edwin Jackson to do that money to do nothing right now. I mean, he's pretty much just like filling up the Gatorade jug over there. I'm not even sure he could be somewhere in their minor league system or basically mowing the grass right now. So next season, if the Cardinals do get him back to $11.5 million, that's a bargain. I mean, yeah, he has not proved that he's not going to throw, over 180 innings. He isn't going to make over 20 starts, but man, it's all about how you finish in this league. And I think with how important he is, and also with Marco Gonzalez not really having a great year health-wise, and yeah, you got Tim Cooney and Tyler Lyons, but when you have a talent like Jaime Garcia, and like I said, it all hinges on if he can stay healthy, because if he goes down again, it just his value as far as reliability and bringing him back just kind of gets stung a little bit. But if he is truly what he says to, he tells the media after every start is that he is healthy, I never felt this better. I think he can almost have somebody read his lines off a script, no matter if he pitches good or bad, but it's pretty much the same thing. I think that you have to bring him back, and I think that maybe the Cardinals, if he does finish the season up very well, maybe they'll restructure, but I think at the very least, you got to bring him back on that 11.5, because he's still going to be proving himself even next year.
Yeah, and the Cardinals have had some bad luck in the last few years with some either signing people to extensions or restructuring contracts. You think of Jason Mott, who basically – signed a 2-year extension and was out for a year and a half of it. You think about, Chris Carpenter at the end of his career, they reworked his a little bit and he still pitched very little in that time period. You think of Jordan Walden, who the Cardinals signed to an extension before this season started, and they've gotten a month of ball out of him. And it seems unlikely now that they'll even see him the rest of the way. So I can understand wanting to rework the contract to give a little bit more security. But given some of that history, I think you've got to go year to year with him. You've got an option for this year. You've got an option for, I got an option for 2016. You've got an option for 2017. As far as I know, they do not have to be picked up at the same time. So you pick up with the one, and if he pitches for you and he does well, then you worry about the next one in 2017. If he doesn't, it's just a $50K buyout. And again, it is the option to try to trade him and get some value. I mean, obviously, if he's healthy at the end of the season, you're probably never going to be able to get more for him than you would after a relatively healthy season. I mean, all of his injuries this year have not necessarily been arm-related.
No, yeah,
so that's,
exactly.
That's a good thing. If you're looking at him, again, the left-handed pitchers in this league, You know, you can
they're
be,
expensive.
As long as you've got a heartbeat, people are going to want you for a job. So if he's doing this well, you know, I think he's going to have value. And there's no doubt that the farm system needs to be replenished a little bit. So this may be a situation where they could do that. Then again, as good as he is, it's difficult to let him go even that way. So Mo's going to have some decisions to make because that rotation is going to be pretty full next year, even without a John Lackey. And so it's going to be interesting to see how he does that. But Garcia has been stellar. Like we said, though, Lance Lynn was not last night. Lance Lynn, with an inning that it's not even a full inning of ball. I mean, he gave up more runs in, 10, 11 hitters than the Cardinals gave up in 4 or 5 games the week before. These things happen. I don't think we should necessarily think it's a big deal for Lynn. But it still wasn't a really great thing to see out of a guy that you kind of expect to be kind of like your staff ace.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't good, and it's back-to-back starts where Lance Lynn's been beat up by the Pirates a little bit. He had that really, really great start on May 1st against the Bush where he pitched 7 strong innings and the Cardinals walked off. But in Pittsburgh, he got out-dueled by Garrett. Then he gave up 5 earned runs right before the All-Star break. And last night, it's ugly. I just got home. I was in the grocery store. And, I get a notification when the game starts, but just for my own health, I turned off the scoring notifications because I need to save my phone and my sanity. So I kind of leave the grocery store and come home and I'm like, oh man, 4. And then you look away, then it's 5. And then it's 6 and 7. And then the next thing you go away and you think, wait a minute, he was pulled 2/3 of an inning. I mean, it's just one of those shocking starts that I'm going to go with Mike Matheny, what he said. And you just kind of go, okay, well, I mean, hopefully it was just that one time. And I mean, that's the most runs he's given up, I mean, all year. I mean, it was only 3 earned in the end, but still it was ugly. I mean, just for him, the biggest thing that really was him only going 2/3 of an inning. I mean, but thank gosh you had the patron pitcher of C70 blog, Tyler Lyons, there to save the day and give them the innings they needed. But I mean, before that, he gave up 4 earned against Colorado. He got beat up, as I said, by Pittsburgh. But other than that, he's been stellar. I mean, he's 9-7 with a decent ERA and a good fielding independent ERA. It's just one of those things you don't want to see because the Cardinals kind of really stepped on the Pirates. And to put your team down that low, I mean, the Cardinals fought back. I mean, it wasn't good to see. But, I mean, unlike most of Twitter, which anytime Lance Lynn does anything wrong, the Twitter floodgates the levees break on Lance Lynn. Pretty much he's the worst starter of all time, even before that inning even finished. Even before, I think it was like 4-0, and they go, oh, that's all right, and he's done, he stinks. And I think we're used to him starting off very roughly and then coming back to pitch, 6 innings, throw 110 pitches. But last night was just ugly. And that makes the start against the Giants even more important because, his work's going to be caught against a team that's playing really good baseball. So I was alarmed by it, but I think with how he's pitched over the majority of the season and I guess the lack of run support he's gotten and the record he still has, I'm not too worried about it.
Yeah. I mean, you're looking at a guy that has pitched, he's given up runs over 5 runs 4-5 times this year, which is a little disconcerting. But then again, I know I have looked through Adam Wainwright game logs a number of times, and Wainwright is the same way. He'll have a lot of games where he's given up 1 or 2 or nothing, but then he just gets lit up. He'll give up 6 or 7 or whatever. I mean, he has those bad games too, so it happens. And like you say, I mean, he was coming off a game where he shut out the Brewers. And granted, the Brewers are not what they used to be, but still, it's a major league team. If you give 6 shutout innings on them, it's something.
Yeah.
And then he had given up 4 against the Rockies, but then the 3 starts before that, 1, 2, and 1.
Yeah.
You get those glitches, and they're going to be there. And he didn't. I don't think you can use the excuse that the team didn't help him, but the team didn't help him. Matt Carpenter would have had the runner, would have gotten an out there, but he threw the ball farther up the line. I mean, it was like he was aiming for the guy in the, you know, he was aiming for the peanut vendor trying to give him a souvenir.
Yeah. And then it was an airmail throw.
It was bad. And then that, you know, that ball that Hayward just had no ability to see. If that game starts at 7:15 like it normally should have, instead of a 6:15 start, maybe he catches that ball. You know, that wasn't all of it. They hit Lynn hard, and they knew, seemed to know he had nothing on that curveball. But, you know,
and it's also, but it's also one of those things where the Pirates are a fastball hitting team, and they really like to hit against Lance Lynn because all he throws is that fastball. And like you just said there, he just didn't have the curve. And, you know, it was an ugly start, but, you know, you do have all those factors that come into play. And I guess maybe it was a good thing that they got him out of there before anything else was done. And apparently, he boasted just got a night off, really. He threw 41 pitches, but that was about it.
Yeah, which is, you know, it's, you know, pretty good chunk. I mean, I noticed, I think it was about the fifth inning before Tyler Lyons hit 40 pitches.
Yeah, he was efficient.
And that, let me tell you, you know, I know you mentioned him, but I can't let it go by without pointing out how how important that was for that.
That was very important.
I mean, and Lyons, I mean, you know, like you said, he had come up, he'd been called up, you know, 8-9 days ago, hadn't pitched at all. And like he said, it's probably a little easier after being in somewhat of a routine all year versus at the beginning of the year sitting around. But, you know, he came in, he gave up the hit that scored the seventh run. But after that, he shut him down. And I saw some, you know, what I watched, he looked like he was a lot more efficient than he has been. That's one of the biggest things against Lyons. The knock on Lyons is not that he doesn't have good stuff, is that he can't keep it in the strike zone well enough. He's got a great slider.
Yeah.
But if it's not close enough, they're not chasing it, then you're not getting, you know, he's running up pitch counts, he's walking batter, stuff like that. He didn't do that last night. He was very good, and of course he had no pressure. You're down 7-0, but the team continues to chip away a little bit.
I almost think there's a lot of there is some pressure there because the Cardinals kind of started to come back, and I think if you're Lyons, you're thinking, man, if I give up any more, this game's really going to be over. And when the Cardinals kind of started mounting rallies and they are chipping away at Liriano like they're going to have this big blow, the fact that he kind of kept him in that game, and I thought his curveball was really good last time. I mean, he was getting some great, like kind of erratic, like Jaime swings on that breaking pitch. So it was really good to see. I mean, I think a guy like that who's just kind of been used and abused by the Cardinals this year, up and down, and kind of start here, relieve here, mop up, you know, he's one of those guys that, you know, he isn't like Cooney. I mean, Cooney's going to come here to start, and then he's going to go back down to Memphis. You know, Lyons come up here, and he'll kind of tag along, you know. And it was, I mean, when he came in, I almost forgot he was on the team because he just hadn't pitched in a while. He kind of been down there just going, is it me? Is it my turn yet? You know, I mean, it's kind of him and Carlos, you know, Villanueva, kind of those long guys. But he gave a lot more than I think anybody suspected he was going to give, and he kind of saved the Cardinals a little bit. Because, you know, I mean, if he doesn't go and you have to use four or five guys to do what he did, that just drains your bullpen. And there are no days off here. The Cardinals are going to be going through a string of games where, I mean, they're going to need their bullpen to be pretty stout. And what Lyons did was almost kind of like a start. I mean, when he finished up, it was like he went a normal start. Usually he goes about, you know, 5 to 6 innings, and that's, you know, he was right in there. And he kept the Cardinals in it. I mean, the Cardinals were one hit away. I mean, even especially in the seventh inning, they're one hit away from tying that game. I mean, it was that close. Mm-hmm. And I think the pressure on Lyons is pretty apparent when you got a 7-0 hole and you got to give your offense a resemblance of a chance.
Yeah, I think that's what we've seen at Lance Lynn a lot this year. He'll give up one or two runs, and he'll basically stall the game. You know, make it, you know, keep them in the game until the offense can come around. And that's not, you know, he gave up too much, couldn't stick around that last night. The good thing was, I mean, one, it was Francisco Liriano, and I'm impressed that the Cardinals rallied as much as they did on Liriano.
Me too.
After one run, if they give up a run in the first, it's like, oh, this is going to be tough. You know, Pedro Alvarez puts the ball into the fence, 4-0. I'm like, this game's over. I mean, there's no way they're going to rally for four runs on Liriano, and then they put up, you know, three more. But to come back and make it 7-5, and you have the go-ahead run at the plate, you know, a long ball, it puts you in the lead. That was some pretty impressive stuff. It was not so impressive that Seth Maness came in and just kind of wiped it all out, but it was kind of a moot point. I think once they had that inning, After that inning, it was going to be tough for them to rally again.
Yeah, Mark Melancon coming in, he does not give anything. I mean, he's been perfect all year. Him and I think K-Rod have been perfect all year. And once you have that two-run lead against him, I mean, nobody wants to see Seth come in there. But, you know, it happens to Seth about once or twice a year where he comes in and he'll get beat up. And there's a – just like the way they do with Lynn, people will just brutalize him and they'll forget all the good things that Seth Maness does, how many games he pitches in, how many messy jobs. I mean, Seth Maness is basically the janitor of this Cardinal bullpen. He comes in when the bathroom's been destroyed and he has to clean up, and, you know, he doesn't throw hard. So you know, the ESPN and MLB Network don't like him at all because he doesn't throw hard. He has that magical sinker. So when he gets brutalized, like beat up last night, everybody just goes, oh, let's trade him and Lance Lynn for a hot dog right now. I mean, seriously, that's basically the consensus of Twitter last night when Lynn and Maness get beat up. But it's going to happen. I mean, you have a guy like him, he comes in. I mean, you know, I almost think when Maness starts an inning, he's not as effective as when he comes in the middle of an inning. I always think that he's a guy that comes in the middle, and for some reason, he just clicks in. I'm sure the stats may not back it up, but I think when he starts an inning, he just doesn't seem like he's as efficient.
Yeah, I don't know. I'd have to look that up. It depends. I mean, and it's kind of like all these pitchers. Sometimes it doesn't matter. That's just bad. I would kind of thought, you know, hey, maybe he'd been used a lot lately. Really, he hadn't been. Honestly, you know, kind of back kind of that opinion. He hadn't pitched since August 9th, so he'd had, what, like 4 days off, which is a pretty decent amount of time for a reliever. And he'd only pitched 5 times in total in August, so that's not too bad. He gave up 3 runs last night. In the 14 games before that, he gave up 3 runs. So, I mean, that happened. I mean, it did happen. It wasn't pretty. It was a little bit disturbing because you had cut it to 7-5. But like I said, momentum is, I think, somewhat real in baseball and in all sports.
Oh, yeah.
And so once you get to that point, it was really, even honestly, Molina hits that sacrifice fly. And even though it scored a run and made it 7-5, I kind of felt like, ooh, you know, I'd rather – you know, a base hit and the wheels keep going and you only have that one run, that's fine. But, you know, 2 outs, you know, then a fly ball and you're out and you're out of the inning, and then you have to start from scratch the next time around. So I don't know that Maness obviously didn't lose the game, didn't make you feel real good, but he didn't lose it. The bullpen, again, pretty dominant all the way around. We've seen a couple of glitches here and there, but you know, it's as good as it gets. I am still disappointed that we're probably not going to see Jordan Walden join this group, because I think – I'm not sure exactly where he goes in that mix, but
yeah,
to have
sure.
that extra really strong arm, especially into October, would just be outstanding.
Yeah, I mean, just the further it gets, I mean – and the problem is that, you know, Memphis, I mean, unless they make the playoffs, they may stop playing here in about, you know, 15, 16 days. So, and I guess he can go down to Florida and throw, but he's not going to get that live game action that he kind of needs. He hasn't pitched since late April. I mean, it's just been a long time. And you think back to when in late April, that was when everybody was saying the Cardinals pitching couldn't last. And now we're on August 14th and it has lasted. And Jordan Walden still hasn't come back. He was on that trek to come back at the end of July. And then he kind of had that one game where he was overcome by heat. And then they just wanted to slow him down. And it just looks like the longer he takes to come back, it's just going to be hard. I mean, it isn't like a hitter. I mean, a hitter comes back, he takes some swings, he's back in it. A pitcher who hasn't really thrown in really in a major league game. I mean, Walden was pitching with Memphis, and he was making that progress, but then they kind of put the brakes on. And as you get to mid-August with a team that has a lights-out bullpen, and they have guys like Lyons that can step in and pitch, and they have guys like Tui Villala who are just waiting down there to pitch, and you have all these like ready to go guys who have been throwing all year. Do you really want to push Walden and really you put him out there? I mean, what can you expect from a guy who hasn't really had a sustained pitching, I mean, performance for over a month? I mean, he didn't last a whole month before he got hurt, and then he was kind of coming back. And I know we all thought he was going to be back maybe by August 1st, but then he got slowed down. And as the games get ticked off, And the need is not there. The need is not really there for a guy like Walden. I mean, yes, it'd be great if he was completely healthy and ready to go. Of course you bring him back, but the longer it takes, I'm kind of with you. Same for Matt Belisle. I mean, him and Walden are just kind of like long shots. I mean, when it comes to those guys, and even on the hitting side, like John Jay and Adams and Holiday. I can't really believe it until I see him coming back. And for Walden, he's going to need a few more games, even if he tried to come back, to get back in the swing, because he hasn't pitched for a little bit.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, when they stopped him in April, and it was that idea of rest and recovery, rest and rehab, or surgery, and they did the rest and rehab route. And I don't know. I'm sure that works sometimes, but it seems like more often than not, all you wind up doing is delaying the surgery. And that's seeming to me what's going to happen here. We're going to see Jordan Walden most likely, and from what I can tell, and again, I have no, no medical knowledge, nor do I have any insights, but my feeling is we're going to see Jordan Walden have surgery here fairly soon. And that's going to affect next year. I can't remember if Walden signed a 2-year deal or a 3-year deal. But again, it's one of those things where the Cardinals signed that, trying to, you know, take some advantage of some things. And it's going to wind up burning them. I don't want to say burning them, but it's going to be frustrating that you're not going to get what you're paying for. you know, hopefully if it is a surgery, maybe he's ready for spring training, but I doubt it this time of year. So you're looking at a late start to next year at best. Again, that's my guess. I haven't seen anybody that says that. I haven't seen any indication of that. So, but that's my feeling, is we'll see him sometime in September. They'll shut him down and he'll have to have surgery. And that would be disappointing. Because again, we know what pitching does in the postseason, and having guys that can throw hard, especially coming out of the bullpen, maybe with some different looks, is key. Because if this team can score one or two runs, as they've proven, they can score one or two runs, they can win a lot of ball games.
They can. I mean, and they haven't, and the pitching hasn't even been stingy as far as, hey, can we have more than two or three runs? No, you can score, scrap out those two or three, we'll be fine. We'll occasionally get the big bases clearing triple, but that's it. Only once every 2 weeks. But yeah, I mean, when it comes to this pitching staff, they just don't need a lot. And anybody thinking the Cardinals' offense is going to go on a Blue Jays like tear, you got to keep dreaming, because this team is pretty much what it is. I mean, even if first base starts to wake up a little bit, they're still going to be a team that averages about 3 to 4 runs tops over the course of a week or two period. And that's just the way it is. When you have pitching that can be sustained like this, and you have, like last night, you have a guy like Lynn who gets beaten up, and then Lyons jumps in and goes, you know, to the sixth with no problems, and it's fine. When you have that kind of pitching, and you have more guys in the farm who are waiting to pitch, you know, you have guys that are coming up through the system. I mean, you know, you don't need to score a lot of runs. You know, I think, you know, and it's like, you know, John Nagel said last week. I mean, I think, you know, the run differential is more, it's kind of a thing where it kind of gets kind of blown out of proportion. When the fact that you go, oh man, you know, they're not scoring enough runs. Well, I mean, this team is what they are. I mean, they're a pitching powered team that scores just enough runs. Now, hey, I mean, it isn't like the arms won't mind a few more runs. I just don't expect it. Like tonight, you know, they go into this game, they don't score for a few innings, and all of a sudden they scratch out three and they win, because Jaime is amazing, and then Rosenthal comes in and closes it out, and it's that easy. A weaker team, it didn't have the pitching. I mean, they could be losing 5-3. But because of the pitching the Cardinals have every night, the bats just aren't needed to do that much except just score the mandatory 3 to 4 runs. And I think it's by now, by August 14th, that the pitching is what it is. People have to accept it for the hitting for what it is. It's just kind of – it's not a weak hitting team. It's just kind of – it's right there on average. I mean, in most offensive categories, they're right around 18, 19 – I mean, they're not low. I mean, they're not at the bottom of the league, but they're like right there in the middle. They're kind of like an average team on offense.
There was a pretty interesting article on Grantland this week talking about the Cardinals and their cluster luck. And you talk about 2013, like you're saying. This time 2 years ago, we were saying the hitting with runners in scoring position can't be sustainable. This is ridiculous. There's no way they're going to hit this well all year long. Well, they hit this well all year long. Kind of faltered a little bit in the playoffs, but still, they did. And that's what we're seeing this year with the pitching staff. We're saying, hey, these guys can't be this good all year long. We're seeing that. It's kind of interesting because they're talking more about the fact that they're just – I mean, I have to pull this up, the statistics on – you know, when people are in runners in scoring position, okay, let me look at this. Let me just start this chart over. Base is empty. They've got the pitching staff gives up an OPS about 700. They're giving up a batting average of 257. Base is empty. Runners on, it goes down to 212 and an OPS of 584. And when runners are in scoring position, it goes even farther down. They're giving up, have an average of less than 200 and an OPS of 552. And as I say in the article, it's supposed to go the other way. It's supposed to be, hitters are supposed to do better with runners in scoring position with men on. That's just the way, statistically, that the way that things run. And they have not only, it's like basically Billy Hamilton hitting every time when there's a runner in scoring position.
Yeah.
That's the example I'm reading right here. So, you know, it's astounding how good they've been able to buckle down and get that out or get those two outs. And part of that's the defense behind them. It's not necessarily the top-notch defense, but it makes the plays and it does well. They get the contact. They strike out enough guys. It's all put together. And I know part of it's going to be very frustrating next year when some of the stuff evens out and we're, you know, we're not seeing games where they're shutting everybody out and giving up one run. We're like, what the heck? Why are they giving up three runs a game? This is totally wrong. But it's an interesting article. It's over in Grantland if you want to give it a search. If you didn't read it this week, it's interesting to see how they're kind of defying the odds, and they're doing it. Like, and I kind of wonder, you know, you do it 2 years ago with runners in scoring position. You're doing it this way with pitching. Once it's kind of a fluke. Two times, is there some way that they're? And it's probably both times just a little bit of luck, but is there some way in the process that they're looking at stuff and being able to cluster these things together? Maybe they're having a better approach in those situations. But then again, if they did, you'd think they'd be able to hit runners in scoring position this year too, and that's obviously not the case.
Exactly. I mean, I think it's just the Cardinals are just kind of becoming, I mean, last year the way they didn't score runs, you know, 2 years ago they kind of depended on that big hit. I think it's just kind of just becoming a pitching team. I mean, the Cardinals, I mean, right now, I mean, they're first in on average, they're sixth in whip, they're fifth in batting average against, they're second in quality starts. I mean, they just got, I mean, you can see that this is a team that just, you can see why they drafted all these pitchers for the past, like, you know, 6-7 years. I mean, they're just stacked. And I think that it isn't like John Mozeliak's not getting hitters. He's not like, no, I don't want to score runs. I want it to be this hard and this stressful. It just, I mean, it just with the way the Cardinals are built. I mean, they just have a plethora of pitching. And also kind of hurts them that, you know, their offensive side has been kind of really hurt this year. I mean, yes, for losing Waino, they've been able to kind of replenish the rotation a little bit better than that. They've been able to replenish the lineup. I mean, you haven't had Holiday. You haven't had Matt Adams. First base has kind of become a rough spot. You know, John Jay and his versatility has been gone. The pitching side has just been able to kind of pick up and go a little faster than the offensive side. But also, if you just look over the trend of the last few seasons, the Cardinals are just kind of becoming that scrappy hitting team that's powered by great pitching. And if you ask me, when it comes to the playoffs and when anything can happen, I think I kind of want that pitching. But then also part of me goes, I'd like to have that one guy that could just hit a ball out of the park at any given time. And so the back of my head keeps going, you know, the Cardinals get in that kind of tight game and they're having good pitching. You know, I'm still not completely convinced that they can get that big hit, that somebody can come off on this lineup, even as good as Matt Carpenter is hitting right now. I still kind of have that glitch in my mind that goes, yes, the pitching's going to carry us deep, but is there that one guy who can just be hot at the right time and, you know, pull a Jim Edmonds or pull a Scott Rowland in the playoffs and just hit that big bomb when we need it? I do have some doubts about that.
Well, yeah, and honestly, right now, the way the pitching is and the things are going, this, if there was just one guy, they'd walk him. I mean, that's true. I mean,
because, you are, you're right.
Yeah, you know, because why? I mean, you look at it, it's just a different game now. I'm looking at the statistics. I mean, I'm just taking ERA here. You have to go down to 18th in the major leagues, 18 out of 30, so over halfway through down, to get to a team ERA of 4. And that's the Padres at even 4. Everybody else is less than 4. And
that's crazy.
So much different than it was 10 years ago or even less, where you didn't. And I think about it. You think about the contenders and how much, you know, hey, the Mets, they have great pitching and they don't have any offense. The Cardinals have great pitching. They don't really have much offense. The Pirates struggled on offense. They have good pitching. The Dodgers kind of have everything except a bullpen. You know, the Nationals, I don't know that you can even count them as a contender anymore. The Cubs are about the only team that actually have hitting. And even so, I think I was seeing something today. Right now, their pitching is still better than their hitting. And so it's pitching is winning games now. And so, again, I think a lot of this, too, you know, being able to scrap for a couple of runs and shut the other team down, you know, as Jason Hayward said to somebody this week, you know, it's like every game's a playoff game. And it can only help them when they get to October to have played in all these kind of close, tight games versus whoever. They seem to play to the level of competition, so it doesn't really matter. You know, again, will it be enough? Will we run into that team? You know, you'd really like to be the Blue Jays where you could just crush and score 10 runs a game. But nobody does that except for the Blue Jays. And, you know, it's got a long way before we have to worry about trying to shut that down. So, I don't know. We'll see. You know, the playoffs are a bit of a crapshoot anyway. This team, even though it's a dominant wins-loss team, does not feel like the dominance, as we've talked before, of some of the past teams. And so you wonder what they're going to do. But, you know, then again, they just keep doing it.
Yeah, I mean, and even the quality starts. I mean, even a team like Colorado has got 40 quality starts. And, you know, these top teams have like 17 and 14 shutouts. It's just, I mean, and even when you get down to batting average against, you know, a bad team is like 250. And then you have these teams that, you know, they're only allowing other teams to hit like 230 as a team, 238. I mean, the Cardinals are letting other teams only hit 239 against them. I mean, that's just not a lot. I mean, as far as home runs allowed, it's even less. You just have all these teams, like you just said, more than half the league is just pitching powered. I mean, slugging percentage as a whole, as we all know, is just going down. So if this is going to be the trend of the whole league, okay, you know, home runs are going to be going down, ERA and no hitters and complete games and shutouts are going to be going up. I think the Cardinals are trending just fine. And I think that's why other teams are trying to, you know, suck them dry at the trade deadline for pitching. I think that's why John Mozeliak just had to part with a guy like Rob Kaminsky, because teams weren't going to give the Cardinals anything unless they got some of that pitching. Because every team knows what John Mozeliak's doing. Every team knows how good the Cardinals are, no matter what happens to them. I mean, I think when teams see a team like a guy like Wainwright go down, okay, they lost Wainwright, they're not going to be as good. Okay, they haven't had Jaime Garcia for the first 2 months of the season. They cannot be that good. And then we are. And they just get envious like that. And that's just the way that Mozeliak's built this team. And I think this is another reason that, you know, Mo knows, and we don't know anything, is that he knows the direction that this league is going, and it's going towards great pitching, dominant pitching, pitching that can be sustained, pitching that staffs that have depth, that when some guy falls down, some guy steps in and just fires off a quality start, like it's easy. You know, I mean, you over the course of the season, Tim Cooney has become a reliable pitcher, and we hadn't seen him before this season. Tyler Lyons has stepped up. You've had, you know, Carlos Martinez go from, is he going to pitch five innings every 5 days, to a guy that's hurling almost as many quality starts as anybody. And, you know, John Lackey kind of bringing back the old days, the way he's pitched all year. The Cardinals just, it's not even just about getting lucky. I've heard that thrown around with the Cardinals about getting lucky. You know, I think it's just, I think Mozeliak's built this team like this. He's built the team almost like a bomb shelter, as far as if you're going to lose somebody, you're going to have that next man up, especially when it comes to pitching. And it's been easier to see him replace a pitcher, but in this kind of league, that's good. I mean, if you got to have one or the other, I still say, even with my fist clenched, that, you know, pitching is good to have. Even though we all want that extra, you want a couple guys that can give you that extra 3-run bomb or hit the home run to give you a 7-1 lead instead of a 3-1 lead. You know, it's good to have pitching. It's good to have somebody that can go out there and stop the other team. Jaime Garcia, the one guy who nobody knew what to expect this year, he's turning into the sharpest pitcher on the staff, especially when he's healthy.
Yeah, and then you look at, you know, Marco Gonzalez, last time out in Memphis, threw 6 shutout innings. He only gave up a couple of hits. And now he struggled a little bit, but we're going to see him most likely in September. You're going to have Cooney up. You're going to have Lyons up. You're going to have Tuilevaala. You're going to have Sokolovich. you know, this bullpen is only going to be stronger. It's going to be able to rest the starters somewhat. You know, I don't think that they're going to go in cruise control. They're only up 6 on Pittsburgh. Oh, I didn't check to see if Pittsburgh won tonight, but
they did. They beat the Mets in 10 innings, so yeah. It's still a 6-game lead.
Yeah, I was thinking of that. And the, you know, the Cubs are not too far out of that too, 7.5 back.
Oh yeah.
And it's one of those things that's and it's kind of frustrating for the Cardinals' point of view is look, you know, 3 of the top 4 teams I think in the National League, maybe the top 3 teams in the National League, are all in the same division. So the Cardinals are going to play either the Pirates, the way things look now, are going to play either the Pirates or the Cubs in the NLDS. And that, neither one of those makes me feel real good.
No, it doesn't.
Because, one, you know, I mean, you know how tough that is to play as the Pirates. And two, oh my goodness, if we lose to the Cubs in the playoffs, I don't think any of us can handle it. so that's a little extra there. But,
and can you imagine Choctaw playoffs at Wrigley Field?
No.
That scares me to death. Yeah. That right now, I'm feeling some queasiness right now. Just thinking about the a bad bounce or you know a windy night in the fall weather in Chicago and you know Chris Bryant galore. You know, I mean, it makes me queasy just thinking about it.
Yeah, and I guarantee you that all the fans on the front row are going to be sitting back. Quite a bit for any foul balls that are coming their way.
Oh yeah,
you know, not gonna, you know, they may rope off the first rows just to be on the safe side. Make
and
sure.
And the Cubs have won 8 in a row, and can you imagine them? They haven't gained barely any ground.
Yeah,
and that just tells you. I mean, they've won 8 in a row. They're having a sensational start. I mean, the way they're playing here in August. I mean, they're doing the best they can. Winning and beating up all kinds of teams, and they're like, okay, our deficit, we've earned about a half a game or maybe a game. I mean, that's just got to be kind of demoralizing. They're playing their best baseball, and they're still looking at a wild card spot.
Yeah, I mean, they'd lead either one of the other National League divisions. They'd lead either everything except for Kansas City. They'd be, you know, second to Kansas City in the American League, but they're stuck in the best division in baseball, or at least the toughest one, because – you know, they're 7.5 games behind the Cardinals. I mean, that's got to be a little bit frustrating for the Cubs. I mean, it's encouraging to some degree because they didn't necessarily expect this to be their year anyway. They're looking at next year and the years after with all that young hitting coming up. But, yeah, I would be frustrated if I was a Cubs fan to think, man, you know, we could just be, you know, we're winning and we're 9-1. And like you said, you only cut a couple of games off. Over the last 10, so off of either St. Louis or Pittsburgh, it's kind of crazy, to see that kind of stuff. Man, I'm just looking at this. The Reds are 51-62, but they'd be, they'd be real close to third in the East over there. You know, they'd be a lot, you know, pretty make it interesting. So, anyway, I just think that it's a good team. I mean, it's a team that we've got to. You gotta feel real good about, but
you know,
once you get into the postseason, it's so different at times. It's just a good thing that is when you keep going to the postseason, you get plenty of experience. You know, that's one thing the Cubs, especially with all their young players, are not going to have is postseason experience. Now, that can be overblown a little bit, but I think it does make some sort of impact at times. I think we've seen that with John Lackey and how well he pitched last year. How much he helped out the Cardinals, and part of that was because he'd done it before. So it's a good situation to be in. Anyway, you know, it was good to win 2 out of 3 against Pittsburgh, keep them 6 games back.
Yeah.
You look at that. You looked at Cole and you looked at Liriano. You didn't know exactly what you're going to get against Jeff Locke. That could have been in a series that easily went all the way to Pittsburgh, and then we're talking. Our tone is a lot different if that's a series sweep. I think.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where I think the Pittsburgh Pirates came in needing a series win, and the Cardinals denied them that. And they almost, I mean, if they would have swept them, that would have been demoralizing. But I think the Cardinals did what they had to do. I mean, if you do that to the Pirates the rest of the season, they're not going to catch us. I mean, the Cardinals, as we all know, have been over 1,000 times. If they go 500 the rest of the year, it's going to be hard for either of these teams to catch them just because the Cardinals, I mean, the way the Cubs have played right now, I mean, they can't keep playing the way they are. I mean, they can't win 10 to 15 in a row. I mean, they're eventually going to have a slump. and that's going to be bad for him. Because then you're going to be approaching late August, early September, and they're going to be still looking up at the Pirates. I mean, it's for the Cubs, you're hoping that the Pirates and the Cardinals go in slumps. And for the Pirates, you have to beat the Cardinals every time you play them, and they're not doing that. And the Cardinals, I mean, they went out, and sure, they came back and they beat Jeff Locke, but then they went out and beat Garrett Cole. They're with A.J. Burnett out, I mean, who's basically like their fill-in ace, a great young pitcher who's just about as lights out as anybody on that staff, and who has, I think he had 14 wins coming in the other night, and the Cardinals kind of handled him. I mean, Yadi got that big bounce for that triple, and the Cardinals kind of ran off with that series, and then they kind of made the last game not optional, but just kind of like you've already kind of derailed the Pirates enough, and as long as the Cardinals keep doing that, I mean, the deficit for these teams chasing them just gets so steep. I mean, they're praying for a big slump, or they just got to beat them every time, and the Cardinals only play the Cubs and the Pirates, I think, six more times each.
Yeah, they play. That's right, because they had nine games with the Pirates, and they just played the three. They have six of both of them in September, which could be interesting. Hopefully,
could be.
It,
yeah.
Hopefully, it isn't. Like you say, you go if they go 500 the rest of the way, they win 98 games.
Which is ridiculous.
And that is. I mean, you look at it. I mean, the Cardinals have 74 wins. They're going to be a good number of teams. Well, not a good number of teams, but they're going to be a few teams. They don't get 74 wins this year.
Yeah.
And the Cardinals have it here in the halfway through August. I mean, there's still 6 weeks left in the season. So that's kind of insane.
That will be gone before you know it, people. Absolutely. I mean, it's going to be September 14th before we know it. It's going to be, the last series of the season where the Cardinals are facing Shelby Miller at Busch Stadium, and everybody's going to be going to be grading that trade. They're going to have their scorecards out for the Hayward Miller trade, and it's going to be like least amount, a biggest factor in the whole stadium, because it's going to be the Cardinals could be going for win number 105. I mean, very well could be going for 100. It could be in triple digits when it comes to wins at that time, and everybody's going to be thinking, if Shelly Miller beats us, I'm done. I'm going to approach the ledge. He can't beat us when it's going to be the least amount of thing. That's just the way the Cardinal fans are. And like I said, before you know it, it's going to be September, and the season's going to be over. And if the Cardinals have home field advantage and they're pitching like this, any team's it's just going to be a hard time facing us, because I mean, the Cardinals keep doing what they're doing. I mean, they're going to have home field, and the way they play at home with the bullpen they have, I mean, especially when you get September call-ups in the next month, and you just have a loaded bullpen, you have a loaded bench, you're going to have all the, a little bit of extra firepower in that bench. I mean, teams need to catch the Cardinals now before it gets to September.
Yeah, I mean, and it's, basically they can't to some degree. It's difficult. And the Cardinals, they've run this. They're now playing the Marlins. They've got the Giants a couple times in the next couple of weeks, which can be difficult. We'll see how that works out. The Giants are a team that, is trying for the postseason still as well, so they should be interesting. But you got the Padres and the Diamondbacks. I mean, those are two teams that are out of it. Even though you do have to take that West Coast trip out to their ballparks, that becomes interesting as well. But, for the most part, you like the way the schedule lines out for them. And again, I mean, it's just one of those things where, while we're looking at that last series, in September, they've got a four-game series with the Reds, followed by three with the Brewers. And then they got another three games with the Reds and four with the Brewers. So, 14 of their games in September against the Reds and the Brewers, you got to like that.
Yeah. Especially the way that those teams are going to look, mm-hmm. and the way Great American Ballpark's probably going to have about 2,000 people in it. So it's going to basically kind of like be playing like in a sand lot. So it's essentially going to be, the only thing you got to worry about is, we might face Chapman. That's basically all you got to worry about. Votto's going to be there. But, those are games where the Cardinals have really gotten through the meat of their schedule. And especially when they finish up this month with it, where they face the Giants in San Francisco, and then they face the Nationals at home. It is a good six-game stretch or nine-game stretch where they face the Giants, the Nationals, and the Pirates to start off, to end August and start September. That's a pretty big spot right there. If the Cardinals can get in there and, you know, win four or five and not get demolished. I mean, after that, it's just going to get really, I mean, and well, you can even add the Cubs series right afterwards. So you got like 12 games right there where that's like the final stand for these teams to plunge their swords in the Cardinals, even if they have a chance then.
We take a little look back. I mean, it's been now 2 weeks since the trade deadline, 3 weeks since they got Cishek, and then I think the biggest thing is everybody's still looking at Brendan Moss.
poor guy.
it is. It's tough. I mean, a guy that had one strike against him, no pun intended given how often he strikes out, but,
yeah.
You know, one strike against him just because they gave up Rob Kaminsky for him. I mean, the guy could come over here and hit seven home runs. Like, he could be hitting like Matt Carpenter right now, and I still think there's some people saying he wasn't worth Rob Kaminsky.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, we could have done fine without him, you know, that kind of stuff.
And Rob Kaminsky has even, you know, and Rob Kaminsky just got lit up in the Indians farm system like last night. So it's one of those things where, I mean, I think it's just the fact that he was really comparable to Mark Reynolds that it kind of doomed him from the start. Even before he got off the airplane, they're like, okay, left hand, you know, Mark Reynolds, and even I've coined him Brandon Reynolds at times, just because he just, you know, strikeouts, and you know, in 34 at bats, I mean, he's got 11 strikeouts and 5 hits. You know, it just he's been having some bad luck. I'll give him that too. I mean, he's hit some balls very hard, and right when you think that he's about ready to have a couple hits, he just has a very erratic kind of weak swing. I was telling AJ the other night on UCB radio where it's just like he's just not making a lot of contact consistently. He's missing a lot of pitches. He's fooled easily on any kind of breaking pitch. I mean, unless they're throwing like, you know, straight fastballs, basically like circa 2009 Jason Mott. I mean, it's essentially Brandon Moss has no chance. And it's unfortunate because, you know, I mean, the guy, I mean, on a level of just being a human, he's trying. I mean, he came from the Indians, a team that's not expected to do anything, to the Cardinals, the best team in baseball. And he came in with a hole to fill. I mean, Mark Reynolds wasn't doing a great job. Matt Adams was still far away. It was the biggest trade Mozeliak made. So he was supposed to come in here and basically be Mickey Mantle at first base. And unfortunately, he hasn't done that. I think everybody's kind of waiting for him to get that first home run. And even I am, just so it gets the pressure off him. Because everybody expects him to have that power. And the poor guy, if you look at his stats, he's got a 176 slugging percentage. And people are just going to keep on piling on. I want this guy so bad to have a three-hit game. Just because, I mean, I think that would do wonders for him. Even if they're scratch hits. Even if they're like, you know, rolled-up newspaper base hits. You know, dying quails, seeing eye singles. I think anything for this guy. Because I do know, the more he goes without a hit, the mentality. And we saw with Carpenter, as strong as Carpenter was, and even as good as John Nagel pointed out to me that his line drive rate was, I think, you know, Carpenter kind of let, you know, some of the bricks kind of pile on top of him in that bad streak. And that's with any hitter. I mean, we saw with Alan Craig last year. We see it with a lot of guys who just, they're just trying to break through. We saw with Jason Hayward in April, where he's just trying to get that big hit and contribute. You know, you come over to the Cardinals, you know, the most respected team in baseball. The pressure is immense. And Brandon Moss is just getting swallowed by it right now. I think he was joking before the game that, you know, I kind of thought about bunting a few times just because that would just throw people off and he might get on base. But with me, I mean, I want to believe that he's going to have a couple hits. But I also see that the chances of him making hard contact consistently, it's just not looking up for him. It's not a good trend.
You're talking about people needing home runs. I think there's a long list of people that need to get some home runs.
Hayward is at the top of that list, right?
Yeah, well, I'm looking at the list here, and I'm just kind of going back. Honestly, the last three home runs that this team has hit were by Matt Carpenter. Then you got, you know, Randall Grichuk. And basically, like I said on Twitter, if it's not Grichuk and if it's not Peralta and if it's not Carpenter, and really if it's not Grichuk and Carpenter, because even Peralta hasn't done a whole lot, I'd have to check and see.
I think he's got like two in his last. I think he's got two this month, but that's it.
Yeah, I mean like you say, you've got Hayward who hasn't hit one since. I mean, I really appreciate what Hayward has done. Don't get me wrong. I think the Cardinals need to re-sign him. He's done everything you would really want him to do.
Peralta has not hit one since August 1st, so even he's been a long time. So yeah. I think you're right on with that Carpenter Gretsch. Keep going, but you're right on with that two-man wrecking ball now.
That does seem to be it. But yeah, you look at Hayward, and he hasn't hit a home run since what, June 24th. We're getting close to 2 months. And granted, home runs is not a be-all and end-all. We like home runs. They're helpful.
But they sure are nice.
You know, but the team can win without them. And I'm not downgrading Jason Hayward at all because he only has 9 home runs. Because he's, like I said, he's hit well. He's playing good defense. He's playing great on the base pass. I mean, everything. But boy, I was looking at that game last night, and he came up one time. I think maybe it was right there in that rally where,
seventh inning, I think.
Yeah, maybe a big fly would have either tied it up or cut it to one or something. I'm like, man, it'd be really nice to, and we're just not seeing that. I mean, he's hitting well, but we're not seeing that out of him. Mark Reynolds, Brandon Moss, all those guys. I mean, Stephen Piscotty still doesn't have a home run, and I know he's not a huge power guy, but it'd be nice to see that.
Yeah.
I mean, just even Colton Wong hasn't hit one in a while.
No, Colton Wong is like, I pointed out last night, in his last 30 games, he's slugging below .300. He's only got an average around .230. And the thing with Hayward, I see what you mean. He's got a lot of hits in his last 10 games. He's got one double, one extra base hit in his last 10 games. And, he is a guy. Now, look, I'm right there with you. I think they should sign him. But I'm also right. I'm also thinking he had that really good streak in June where I think he hit I'm looking at it right now, he hit 4 home runs in a week. He hit one off Minnesota, he hit one against Philadelphia, 2 against Miami, and then that's it. And as far as doubles, in the month of July, he had 6 doubles and a couple of triples, but in this month, he's got 3 doubles in 14 games. He's got 13 hits, and he's only struck out 6 times, 5 walks. He's stolen 3 bases. He's doing all the other things well, but for a guy that's hitting like 4th right now, he's not hitting like a cleanup guy. And I think that's where people are getting on him is because, you have Peralta hitting 3rd due to Holiday being out, and you have Hayward, a guy who's not hitting extra base hits. He's only got, like I said, 1 double in his last 10 games, no triples, no home runs. He hasn't hit a home run since Jaime injured himself, essentially. Mm-hmm. It's one of those things where I think the pressure on him is that he's hitting in a production spot, and maybe they should put Peralta back in that spot. Maybe you should put Grichuk and just leave him in that 4 spot and let him run with it. I don't know. I've tried to stop complaining about lineups, but it's just so hard because then you start to talk about lineups and you go, am I complaining or am I just discussing it? Because then you forget the correlation. I think, as long as you don't say Mike Matheny sucks, that means you're not complaining about it. But I do get the fact that people look at him and go, hey, you're not hitting for a lot of power. It's because he's been hitting essentially in a big power spot.
Yeah, well, but then again, the flip side of that is nobody else is hitting either. So it's not like you can put, there's a problem with, maybe you put Grichuk there, but Grichuk's still a little bit of erratic. You're going to have the strikeouts, and you'd like to have him in a spot where maybe he could use his speed if he did get on base. Other than that, there's not anybody. You look at this team over since July 1st, they've hit 29 home runs. It feels like all of them are Matt Carpenter. They're not. But that's in 38 games. So they're hitting, less than a home run a game, which is not too surprising. Actually, 29 home runs is a little high.
It's funny. If you look at Hayward, looking at what he does in each spot in the order, when he hits fifth, he's hit 3 of his home runs and he's slugged .550 and he's got triples and doubles, but even when he's hitting 4th, he's got good numbers. It's just, he doesn't slug a lot, but it's like you said, without Matt Holiday and with a very weak hitting team, I do see that point too, that who do you put there if you don't? And if you move Grichuk, is it going to make a big deal to move Hayward down to 5? So I think you just kind of ride it out, and I just hope that he finds his swing. You hope he goes on another tier like he did in June where he hit like 3 or 4 home runs. But I just think at this point, maybe home runs are just not what this team does well.
No, and that's just, I guess that's the new normal, if you will. You can't expect anybody but Carpenter to get the ball up in the air enough to hit it out. You look at You know, look at Yadier Molina. You know, he had two of his home runs within like 5 days of each other.
Yeah.
That was June 19th.
And everybody celebrated like they won the lottery. He hit a home run.
Yeah. Oh, well, and he had two, and you think, yeah, maybe Yadi's back. Maybe he's finally hitting. And Yadi's still hitting some, but, you know, I think I would probably, I mean, you got him, if you're talking about people that are hitting in power, you know, slugging plus spots, you know, he's hitting, what, fifth, sixth?
He's hitting fifth. Yeah, he's hitting fifth and sixth. He should be hitting, like, you know, eighth. I mean, seventh.
Seventh.
You know,
I could see that.
I almost think that, you know, if Matt Adams and Holiday do come back, they're going to make this lineup kind of really get shaken up. I think he's going to, I know he's going to put Adams right back in that fourth spot just because. I mean, it's really going to get shaken up. And, you know, as, you know, I mean, I'll be the one guy to say that I tweet out tonight that, I mean, I couldn't see Matt Carpenter having all of a sudden having 18 home runs. Now, of course, I'll mention the guy again. John Nagel said that he did because, ladies and gentlemen, John Nagel just knows everything. I mean, as much as we want to say, I mean, ask anybody on the internet. I mean, there's one guy that knows everything that, I mean, I think, when I have a problem with my taxes, I am going to call John Nagel and just see what he has to tell me, because the guy knows everything and he's right. You know, he saw it coming. He saw Carpenter doing what he did. But I just kind of imagine if Carpenter hadn't turned around like he did, where would this team's offense be? Because with all the home runs he's hit, I think he's hit 8 in the last 15 games. It's just ridiculous. I mean, I said moving him back to the leadoff spot couldn't hurt, but I mean, what he's done is really just pick this offense up and throw it on his shoulder, which is something, as we all know, we shouldn't be surprised by. I'm just surprised at all of the power output that he's all of a sudden found.
Yeah, I mean, we talk and talk about lineup doesn't matter, but apparently it does for some people.
Yeah.
I mean, and again, Carpenter was starting to hit the ball, like John was saying, and I'm sure he was seeing more than I saw, but even in those two or three games riding up to the lineup switch, Carpenter was hitting the ball better. There obviously is a comfort factor for him being in that leadoff spot, because it's almost too coincidental that his tear started then and has continued as he stayed in that spot. You know, I don't know. I would like to see Piscotty up a little bit in the lineup, because he has had, you know, he's had 7 doubles over in his, you know, 22 games now.
He's kind of a hit machine.
Yeah, and I feel a little bit more comfortable with him up there. You know, if he was hitting a little bit more, but with, you know, a couple of home runs, maybe he would be hitting that fifth. Maybe a little high for him. Maybe hit him sixth. Yeah, you hit Grichuk fifth, him sixth. You know, I don't know. Again, the lineup is probably not going to score more than 3 or 4 runs, no matter what order you put them in. As long as, you know, you're not leading off Pete Cosma or something, you're probably okay.
Probably okay.
But, you know, again, there's some interesting things you'd like to see. It's not to the level of really whining about it, I don't think. But anyway, and again, we've seen Matheny shift some stuff around, and he's not locked into stuff, which I guess is good. He's willing to try some stuff out, but it just hasn't really clicked yet. And like I said, we kind of started this with Brandon Moss. Hopefully he'll get that down. I know there's a pretty decent article here from on Derek Gould's Birdland about him looking for his swing, and he feels like he's finding it somewhat, but he's got to get it into position. He's hopeful that by the end of the season we'll see a little bit more of what the Cardinals saw in him. And I hope so. Like you say, it'd be nice to see him get a couple of hits, 2 or 3 hits in a night, and maybe kind of get on a little bit of a roll. You know, once Matt Holiday comes back, there's a lot of different things of how do you keep Piscotty in the lineup? You know, what do you do here? But I would like Brandon Moss to make that a difficult decision by playing some better baseball.
Oh, yeah. I mean, anything above what he's doing right now would be great. I mean, even to see occasional double or home run. I mean, all I want him to do, and I said this back in May or June with Reynolds, is just be yourself. I mean, I'm not asking you to hit for average. I just want you to provide some power. I mean, we brought you over here because Mozeliak, he liked the control you gave him next year. He liked what you could do, what you've done in the past. I mean, this is a former all-star, a guy who's hit some home runs. He's just in a big funk. And, you know, he's coming off some surgery. Maybe he's not completely comfortable. And Mozeliak just is kind of preying on the fact that he does come here and finds more comfort, finds that stroke again. I mean, the guy does still have 15 home runs, even with all the struggles. He still hit 15 bombs this year, and that puts him third on a team right now. And all I want from him to do, and this is all I ever wanted from Mark Reynolds, I mean, you don't have to hit 290 or 300. You can strike out as much as you want, but you got to give us what you're brought here for. You got to give us that power. And right now, anything that he gives, I mean, and I do respect Matheny for sending him out there. I mean, he, after the first few games where he didn't hit, he didn't send him and put Mark Reynolds back out there. He has played Moss in most of these games in August. He has put the guy out there, and even when he hasn't started, he's been in there as a replacement. He's gotten some pinch hits. You know, I think if he doesn't start hitting, him and Reynolds are basically going to be glorified bench bats in September when Holly does come back, which I think that Scotty's got to play, especially if he keeps hitting, because he's just kind of like that versatile guy who isn't going to strike out. He makes a lot of contact. But like you, I do want to see Brandon Moss make that a hard decision. I do want to see Matheny have to go, man, I have all these guys hitting really good right now. Who do I sit? And then that guy becomes your weapon off the bench late. I do want to see Reynolds. I mean, Reynolds got on base three times tonight. He had two hits. He had a good night. I mean, you know, he's keeping the memory of Patrick Swayze in Point Break alive with his that cuffed beard. I'm telling you, man, him and Jaime Garcia are beard specialists. At the end of their career, they can always go, we can trim a beard like the best of them. I mean, it doesn't matter what they do in a baseball field, folks. But
yeah.
Oh, go ahead. Yeah.
I'm just agreeing with you.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where I do want one of these guys to step up in these next few games because, you know, Matt Adams is still a few weeks off. I mean, at best, I don't see him or Holiday coming back until September. So they have two more weeks here, two, three more weeks. I mean, you're going to get starts. I mean, Piscotty's going to play left. Grichuk's going to be in center. Peter Borges is going to start once every 2 weeks. You know, maybe pinch hit and pinch run because the guy just can't get out there. But, I mean, these guys are getting opportunities. I mean, one of them is going to have to take off or we're just going to see – The floodgates open up on Moss. I mean, all it's going to take is two good games. I mean, you know, he has a couple hits, he hits a couple home runs, and he provides a boost because with the way this team doesn't hit home runs, if Moss goes on a streak, these fans haven't seen that kind of thing outside of Grichuk and Carpenter. And that, if he does that, that's all I want. I mean, as I've said many times, I don't need the guy to hit for average or get on base. I just need him to come up there with the big boomstick and crank a couple bombs out and, you know, a couple difference makers in a game. And that's all I want from him. And I think that's all Mo wants from him. Mo didn't bring this guy over here to stabilize the lineup. He brought him over here as a guy that can provide some power. Something the Cardinals were lacking with, you know, the rough start for Adams, and he's been out. Holiday's been out. Holiday was having a weak year power-wise to begin with. So I think anything that Brandon Moss can do from here on out, it's a good thing. And he's going to get a chance. I mean, for two or three more weeks, like I said, these guys are going to start, Reynolds or Moss. So one of them's going to have to take off.
Yeah, I got to tell you, you're talking about first base. We watched Stephen Piscotty play there, two nights ago. And he looked pretty well. He looked pretty good there. In fact,
yeah, pretty comfy.
You know, it was early, later in that game, they moved him out back to the outfield, and Reynolds came in, and there was a ball thrown to first. And Reynolds just didn't look like he stretched for it. I mean, he just didn't move very much. And I was thinking, Piscotty looked better than that playing. And so I, you know, not that I'm saying that, you know, maybe it's just one of those things. You know, Reynolds is not, obviously Reynolds is a capable first baseman, but, you know, Piscotty has come to that position and done it well enough that if he has to play some first base, he can do that. And I don't think he's going to embarrass anybody.
Well, I think he's taken – I mean, I know he's been taking reps a lot, but and that's a good, smart thing to do because, I mean, with the way those guys aren't swinging the ball, I mean, the bat, I mean, if Holiday does come back, I mean, and before Adams, I mean, you're going to have to find a place for Piscotty to play. So the fact that he's taking reps over there, I guess I'm not too surprised at seeing him improve, and it's good to see him get some comfort over there because, as we all know, next year, if it comes down to him and Adams at first base, I mean, he could see some time there, especially if Hayward does sign here. So, yeah, I mean, I did notice that, though. I noticed that he was a lot comfortable on just even on taking throws and adjusting his footwork. I mean, you know, when I played first base in high school, the first thing they taught me was just footwork. I mean, just shifting the left leg on the bag, knowing how to stretch, knowing how to scoop, knowing basically not freezing up when a ball is thrown in between. And, you know, you could see it in his first few games there where he was kind of a little in between, a little bit unsure of how to stretch or how to move. And I did notice that last night that he is moving a lot better, doing the little things that don't go into the saber metrics on your defense, but just kind of it shows him showing some more comfort there in case these two guys don't start swinging and he plays a lot at first base in September.
Tonight, Alex Reyes strikes out 10 batters in 6 innings, just gave up 1 hit.
Oh, wow.
For the AA team. Obviously, you know, he has struggled a little bit at AA, but not too bad. Obviously, this is a good thing. What are the odds we see him in September? What do you think?
You know, I wrote about this guy today for KSDK. He is the next, like, lightning rod to come out of that that system. You know, I think I'd like to see him. I just don't know with the way that his body is kind of barked up a little bit when he gets overworked a little bit too much and he's at double A. And as we've seen with this pitching staff, is he going to be needed? I would love to see him come up here in September and get a couple. And just really, I love to see him come up here and just be with the team and you know, get some tutelage from Waino, listen to Lackey, listen to these guys. You know, get together with Martinez, a guy who's very close to you in age, who can probably help you kind of get acquainted. I would almost love to see him just take a vacation with this team, just kind of tag along and, you know, maybe pitch a couple innings, especially if the Cardinals do kind of start racking the wins up. I would like to see him pitch, but for some reason I don't see it happening because I think the Cardinals would go to guys like Mitch Harris and Tui Valala, just guys that they've already used and they're comfortable using, even though I think it'd be kind of nice to see him up here because he's got an arm that can be electric. You bring this guy out in the seventh inning or eighth inning just to see what he's got, and these hitters are like, who is this guy? I mean, if they just produced another like guy who's just unstoppable, and he hits triple digits, he's got a very, very good breaking pitch. He's still working on a third pitch, but the Cardinals aren't going to ask him to start. I mean, for me personally, I would love to see him just come up here and just spend some time with the team. You know, kind of keep himself glued to Waino's hip and, you know, talk to Martinez and Waka and just kind of get acquainted with traveling with the team and being around these veterans and also maybe pitch, you know, 3 or 4 innings. I mean, it can't hurt because when Memphis is done, they're done. I mean, there's the fall league, there's the, you know, the winter league. But I think I would like to see him come up here and get a little time with the big league club.
Was looking back because it doesn't seem to be that the Cardinals have done a lot of that, but they did do it with Shelby Miller. He came up in September in 2012,
yeah.
Pitched out of the bullpen. He pitched a total of 13 innings. That's counting that start in that one start he had after the Cardinals clinched, where he you know almost was working on a no hitter for a while.
Yeah,
but
the first hitter got on and he had 27 straight.
No, that was the Rockies game a few years
back. That was the Reds game.
12.
The
yeah.
Reds game, yeah.
Right, where he went like 5 innings, I think, of no-hit ball. And then
yeah,
gave
still very impressive.
Yeah, definitely was. For the most part. But, you know, I was thinking, you know, Martinez and Walker, they've all come up in the middle of the year.
Yeah, I mean, I just keep thinking it'd be great. I mean, even if you do want to throw him out there for a start, just see what he can do. I mean, if you have this – I mean, if the Cardinals broaden this lead by 8 and 9, 10 games, and, you know, you can just throw this guy out there against Milwaukee or Cincinnati and see what he can do. I mean, just let's say, hey, kid, go out there and fireball. Go ahead. I mean, just go do your thing. And maybe he didn't spend the whole September with him. Maybe he just kind of comes up and pitches a little bit. But I don't know. I just think the experience of having even a 20 – I mean, the kid's going to be 21 before the end of the month. I mean, I think that it'd just be great for him to come up here and spend a little time and almost kind of work on the mental aspect, kind of travel with the team, ride around with them. I mean, just kind of, like I said, keep yourself glued to guys like Wainwright who, you know, could be kind of starting to kind of pitch around and could be showing them some stuff. I just think that it's almost like him going to school for a month with this big league club.
Yeah, the only, you know, the downside is, and I think it's one of the things the Cardinals have focused on at times, he's not on the 40-man roster. You'd have to
Yes, yeah. You
have starts of time. And it being that there's no guarantee that he's going to be in St. Louis next year, I mean, if they thought he was going to be a guy that's going to win a spot and start in spring training next year, they might do it because they're going to have to add him anyway.
Yeah.
Being that there's no – in fact, odds are, given the fact that there's like 6 or 7 starters still in this organization for those 5 spots, you know, he's unlikely to come up until midseason, maybe be a bullpen guy next year. Yeah, I don't know that they want to go ahead and add him to the 40-man.
Yeah. Yet.
I think that's the only thing probably holding him back. He's pitched 80 innings so far this year. You know, you added probably what, you know, two more starts. Maybe
Like I said, I would love to see it, but I told somebody tonight, it's kind of like a yes and no thing. Like, yes, I think he'd come up here and could blow some people away. But as we all know with John Mozeliak and that starting the clock, like you said, I think it's kind of like a 35-65 chance. I mean, I still think it's kind of low that he does come up here unless the Cardinals are going to use him. Unless they really do see him, like you said, that they see him starting this season next year with the team, and that would just be kind of crazy. That means the Lackey and Garcia both don't come back, and Marco Gonzalez has kind of dropped in the depth chart. I still think that they'll say, you know, he's only 21 years old. He's only kind of really starting to stretch his legs. One thing I noticed about this kid, in 247 career innings in the minors, he's only given up 7 home runs. I mean, that is just electric. I mean, when I was writing this column on today, because KSDK basically said, hey, do you know about this kid Reyes? I was like, do you not know about him? Yes, I'll write about him. I mean, I basically dug up into him. I asked the Springfield beat writer, Derek Shore, to kind of give me some good quotes because he's actually watched him pitch 3 times. So it's a really good read. It's over at KSDK. I kind of really just kind of dug into this guy. Like I didn't know who he was. I kind of went into his stats, and he's, you know, He's a guy that's going to turn 21 in less than 2 weeks, and he's a guy who just strikes a lot of guys out, doesn't walk a lot of people, and doesn't give up a lot of home runs. He has not given up a home run all season in either double A and high A or double A, and he's only given up 7 home runs in what is now over, I think, 253 innings. I mean, it's just ridiculous how efficient this guy is at such a young age.
Yeah, and, you know, Matheny – I haven't seen any comments about Mozeliak. Matheny did not rule him out. He has said he wouldn't rule anybody out coming up.
Yeah.
We have seen young phenom guys, not necessarily just for the Cardinals, but come up and make an impact in September and get to go on to October. I mean, that's how K-Rod got his start back at the Angels in 2002. You know, coming up and being that young guy that just blew everybody away. It could happen. It does seem probably, like you say, 65-35 against. I would say they'll probably say he's pitched enough this year.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Rest him.
I don't know if he's going to go to Arizona Fall League or if he's done that before. But, it just seems unlikely. But, you know, it's something to keep an eye on as we get down to the end of the August and start looking at that. We've gone for well over an hour because that's what we do.
That's what we do. We're consistent. We are not like Tara Wellman who knocks that stuff out in 10 minutes. That's not fair, Tara, if you're listening. I mean, that is like, I mean, that's kind of like, we're like an A-ball as far as time efficiency, and you're like in the major league club. I mean, she knocks that stuff out in 10 minutes and has graphics, and she actually looks a lot better than we do. That's why you're listening to us. You're not seeing us. Just nobody would tune in that for over an hour, much less 10 minutes.
No. I don't know about it. I think that she's probably, you know, like the fastball, you know, the flamethrower out there. She's the Trevor Rosenthal, you know, bringing the heat. And
we're Lyons and Manus.
We're the maybe the Lackey, the old grizzled guy.
Grumpy people who kind of, you know, get really disgruntled really easily. And if I don't get my coffee, I am John Lackey, essentially.
This is true. And, you know, sadly, I am old. I think I just got a cramp in my leg. We were talking about that. That's
watching that office chair. Watch it. Don't swivel too fast.
That's what's sad is I'm sitting in a chair getting a cramp in my leg. All right. Well, that means obviously it's time to wrap this up. All right, Dan, when we're wrapping these things up, it's time for you to go to the movies. Tell us what we're watching and what we're not watching.
Okay. Well, if you haven't watched Mission Impossible yet, I do suggest that. But Guy Ritchie's latest film, Man from U.N.C.L.E., adapted from a TV series and stars Mr. Superman himself, Henry Cavill, is a good time in the movies. And it does that because it takes the whole spy thing, the whole James Bond idea from this TV series, and it makes it a really cool, funny, jazzy flick that doesn't feel too heavy. It goes by really quickly. If you know who Armie Hammer is, he's actually good in this movie. He does not basically stand around like a cardboard box. He actually has a character to play. It's, you know, Guy Ritchie's gotten very confident and consistent with age. I mean, he directed Snatch, he directed the 2 Sherlock Holmes films, and it also sheds a light on the talent of Cavill, who all we know up to now is if you watched him on Tudors on Showtime or if you watched him as Superman and Man of Steel. and the upcoming Batman for the Superman, I think this guy's got swab to burn. I mean, as far as just the looks, he's got the James Bond looks. He's got the swagger, and it's got some good action. I mean, what I liked about it was it really moved. And you know, if you're not going to do anything special, if you're not going to reinvent the wheel with a movie experience, you know, it better have a good pacing. And Ritchie really does make a very kind of almost like a thinking man's kind of thriller here. He has good action. It doesn't, it's kind of like comic book action, but it's not over the top so much where you roll your eyes. I kind of describe the film as it's kind of like a jazz tune. You may not think it was made for you, but you're going to enjoy it anyway if you give it a chance. And for people that know the TV series, they'll really like it. I know people have kind of come back to me and said they actually liked it a lot. My review's at KSDK if you want the long-winded version. But the short version is, if you like spy films that have a sense of humor, this movie's for you. And if you don't want to watch that, you should still go watch Mission Impossible 5. For the people that want to know about the birth of the New World Order, you know, Straight Outta Compton's gotten some good reviews. I have not reviewed that yet. I pretty much see one movie a week. And this week it was Man from U.N.C.L.E., and it was a good flick.
I also realized as we shifted a little bit too fast out of things, because we did have a Twitter question this week.
Yeah.
We have one. Again, you can always tweet at us, Best Dan's Baseball 1. Yeah, you'll find it. It's you know, you'll find it. But anyway, we can always tweet us or tweet Dan at Buffa82, me at C70. We'll answer questions in here. And one of them related to tonight's game. As we've seen over the last couple of weeks, Carlos Martinez is, well, one, we've talked about his personality. We love Carlos Martinez. He's obviously a significant builder with Gatorade cups. mainly, maybe the ones that he's using to dump water on Matt Carpenter's head. You know, they're hydrating, you know, whatever the case may be. But he is a significant builder of pyramids with these cups. And a couple of weeks ago with the Reds game, you know, the little clip was making the rounds where he was building his thing and then keeping Michael Wacha's foot away from it as Wacha continued to inch his foot like he was going to knock it over. Well, tonight, and I missed this during the game, I caught it maybe the very end of it, apparently he was built him another significant stack of,
he did,
of this. And as he's talking to Wacha to make sure Wacha doesn't do it, somebody, and I don't know that we ever figured out, in fact that's our question, who did this dastardly deed, knocked over through something, I don't know, a baseball, whatever, from a distance, and knocked over half of this cup, which probably is, you know, just, if you've seen people try to touch Adrian Beltre's head, I think it's kind of the same thing as trying to knock over Carlos Martinez's cups. I don't think he handled it well. But anyway,
no.
So he looked like he was going around to figure out who did this thing. I saw a lot of animated discussions with John Jay. I don't know. Dan, who knocked over the cups?
Well, you know, in the shot, you see Piscotty kind of, the ball kind of went over his shoulder. So maybe Piscotty was potentially a screen. I don't think his Gatorade dumping buddy, Matt Carpenter, did it. But I almost kind of think that maybe, you know, Wacha's off to the right. John Jay is the suspect. John Jay really, you know, hasn't been doing much of anything. Maybe it was Matt Adams. Because, you know, I didn't see him behind him. And Matt Adams is the kind of guy that I think if Martinez is going to go up against, he's not going to want to face, because Matt Adams is a big guy. I almost kind of think I didn't see Randall Grichuk. I mean, people, because it had a good arc from across the dugout, because Martinez was so focused on Wacha, because Wacha has been like his proposed Gatorade Cup knocking down nemesis for the last week and a half, 2 weeks. And, you know, John Jay, well, I'm not even sure if he was even in the shot. But he's definitely a prime suspect because he was all around the cups. He was trying to knock them down. But it was, like I said, it was a decent little toss. And we also have to remember that when Mark Reynolds came into the dugout from one of the innings in late in the game, he actually bounced one off the fence and eventually did enough to knock the cups down. So maybe it was Mark Reynolds. Maybe Mark Reynolds was taking his second shot of the game when he was coming in from the infield. He bounced one up against the fence that eventually did knock the cups down. So if I had to go of what I saw late in the game, I think Mark Reynolds, unless he was out in the field, I think Mark Reynolds is the suspect. And if so, he should have to shave his beard.
Well, let's not get carried away now. You know, I didn't see this. I don't know where all the people lined up, and I would like to see some maybe crime scene photos.
Me too.
To try to start looking this out. But here's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking that the fraternity of pitchers is a close-knit one. I don't think
yes.
that a position player comes in here and starts tinkering with Carlos Martinez, because Carlos Martinez means too much to this team, and you don't mess with him. You know, these pitchers, they're close together. They do stuff together. They do all this stuff. So I'm thinking it's a pitcher.
It could have been Lance Lynn. You know, Lance Lynn's a very quiet guy. You know, he doesn't say much. He's probably pretty mad that, you know, Martinez pitched very, very well against the Pirates and he got bombs. Maybe there's a little competitive edge there. Okay, you know, I didn't pitch better than you, but I'm going to knock your cups down from a distance, and I'm going to frame John Jay because John Jay's got funny hair, and just because I can do that. And I'll tell Mark Reynolds to toss the ball later so it makes it look like he's trying again. I think Lance Lynn could be a quiet suspect here if we are going with it has to be a rotation. I don't think it's Jaime. I think Jaime's off in his own little world. I mean, of course, you know, when starters start, they don't want to be bothered. And Wainwright kind of came over right as it happened, so I don't think it was him. And Waka, as we all know, is being basically held at finger point by Carlos. So I think Lance Lynn could also be a quiet suspect here.
Dan, have you ever watched detective stories? You never interrupt the detective while he's trying to do his stuff. Now, come on now. Anyway. No, you ruined it because I think it's Wainwright, personally. Look, if you're looking at Piscotty as a screen, which I didn't say, but I'm taking your word for it. I mean, who's going to throw the curveball over his shoulder?
Exactly. 12-6.
You've got a guy that, what's Martinez going to do to him? He's the staff leader.
He's a star. He's tall. He's like 6'5".
Yeah, he's a guy that has been known to play a few pranks here and there, have a good time.
He's got a smoker in his garage. I mean, he makes good barbecue. I mean, this is a guy you really don't want to mess with, especially in St. Louis. I mean, if you touch Waino, especially a hurt Waino, you could be expedited. I mean, you'd be tossed out of the country.
So, my feeling is Waino, you know, because this is what happens when the guy can't pitch. he starts messing around. Maybe he's you know, being subtly keeping the pecking order.
Could be Matt Holliday. Matt Holliday, as we saw in the booth the other night, is quite the comedian. He's a guy that has actually been known to be a practical joker. Maybe it was a Matt Holliday Waino like job. Maybe, you know, I mean, was Holliday even there tonight? I know he was there the other night.
I don't know. I didn't see him tonight from what I saw of the game.
He's pretty noticeable when he's in there. So maybe if he's not there. Also, it could have been, you know, I mean, Waino, even if he didn't throw it, he basically could have been the mastermind behind it. I mean, he almost kind of had one of the trainers do it just because, I mean, well, you can't beat up a trainer.
Yeah, it's possible. It's possible. So, but, and yeah, I think, Matt Holliday, I saw some of that. I was putting kids to bed. I was doing stuff. I had it muted.
He's so funny.
I saw parts of it. And I think some of us, especially you and others that have gone to winter warm-up and covered that, some of the bloggers have been able to do that. I have not ever gotten up there, even though I've been invited. I haven't had a chance to get up there to do that, and hopefully one day will. But I think some people have seen Matt Holliday in those situations and have come across his dry humor. And I think some of us, we've seen some things. We see his interaction with Jim Hayes at times, and so we get that. But a lot of people, I think of him as the quiet, sullen, almost John Lackey type. They were really surprised to see how personable he can be when he gets going.
Yeah, you know, and I kind of attach it to, I think it kind of takes the right guy to bring it out. I mean, in the winter warm-up when he was answering questions at the podium, he was kind of stoic, kind of sullen, I mean, very quick. But then when he went outside the room, I mean, him and Jim Hayes really mixed it up. I think Danny Mack did a really good job of kind of bringing it out of him. I mean, Danny Mack, I mean, for anybody who likes or doesn't like him, he asked some good questions. I mean, minutes before, you know, he was kind of really sending some good questions at David Peacock, who's basically behind a task force for the Rams' new stadium. You know, I mean, Danny Mack will pretty much make you kind of come out of your shell. And I think that helps with Matt Holliday, who's also a very practical joker behind the scenes and with his team. But, yeah, I mean, as we've seen in most interviews, you know, he's very soft-spoken. He's very dry, except when he's around Jim Hayes, when he's making fun of Jim Hayes, is very rarely listened to radio show. But it's one of those things where I think Danny Mack did a good job of kind of bringing it out of him. And I think once he kind of brought him out of the shell, you know, when he was allowed to kind of start really relaxing, you know, and also they talked about his charities and they got him comfortable. And, you know, I mean, I personally think Matt Holliday and Adam Wainwright should call a game together just because the way, even just Matt Holliday, his sense of humor, but also the fact that he was giving these little tidbits, like he was telling people how Jose Oquendo just throttles the people on second and third base about taking a bigger lead and how he just loves to hit. And, you know, Matt Holliday was able to mix in, you know, some anecdotes about the team and how he didn't really like having Randall Grichuk be called the strongest man on the team. And, you know, he basically had the one-liner night was just because he hits one opposite field home run doesn't make him the strongest man on the team. Mm-hmm. And so you have him dropping little one-liners like that, but you also have him really laying down some good stuff about the game, about the behind-the-scenes stuff that we don't see. Because you always kind of see Oquendo saying stuff, but there's Holliday telling you, yeah, you know, he really gets on you. So if there's any way they can do that, since these guys aren't doing much of anything else during the game, I think Waino and Holliday should be like sub-in guest color analysts.
Yeah, it really needs to be kind of like, you know, the Mystery Science Theater 3000, where they play the game maybe the next day, or, you know, just put the game up and have them sitting in front of it, you know, cracking whatever.
Yeah.
It's kind of interesting. You talking about, and I know we said we're going to shut up, but we're not going to right now. You said something about Dan McLaughlin, and it's interesting to think, I think, that there's going to be a generation of Cardinal fans, this generation probably, that are going to think of Danny Mac, not like Jack Buck, but he's going to be the voice that they're going to associate with this team. I mean, Mike Shannon is on the radio side, but I was looking it up. He's been doing, play-by-play for Fox Sports since 2000. I mean, that's 15 years.
Yeah.
And he's, you know, they've got a contract now till what, 2038 or something like that?
Yeah.
And as long as he stays out of trouble, which, you know, has been an issue in the past, he's going to probably be there for all those. I mean, that could be, you know, 34. He could be doing this for 40 years.
Yeah, he could.
That's huge.
Yeah, I had the chance to know Danny Mac back in the scoreboard days. I saw him in the press box a lot. I saw him like when he was in 2000, when he just kind of started, when he was doing stuff for SLU basketball and the Blues as well. And he's a good guy. I mean, he's very humble. I mean, he's had his troubles, but he's come out on the end, and he's really when I talked to him last year, I had a chance to interview him, and the interview can be found at KSDK. I kind of was able to shoot him some questions, and you know, when I read the answers, I mean, this is a guy who really loves what he does. I mean, he loves going to the ballpark. He gets there really early, does his homework. You know, he loves making these calls up on the fly where he gets really excited. And I find myself loving to watch the game when he's doing it. I mean, and, you know, whoever's with him, Ricky and Al, I mean, they're okay, and they kind of drag it down. That's why I kind of want the players to be guest color analysts. But I have associated this team – like when I sit down at night and it gets to be 6:30, 7 o'clock, I mean, I do kind of expect to hear, you know, Danny McLaughlin. And when he's not there, it's kind of weird. And that's just, like you said, that's a generational shift of this Cardinal fan base, is that we have grown to either love or hate him. I mean, he is the guy. And when I got to have him answer these questions, you really got the sense of a guy who's been wanting to call games his whole life. I mean, this guy told me that he was calling wiffle ball games in the backyard in South City when he was a kid. You know, he's worked really hard since 2000. You know, he had a little slip up, but I also think that he learned from it and he's come back and he's just, I mean, he just loves what he does. And the fact that he's thriving right now and he gets more comfortable. And like I said, he brings it out of these players. I mean, he's kind of like Jim Hayes, if not a little bit more sharper, the way that he just kind of asks these guys questions and he does the homework. And I think the players respect him when he does the homework. Because he told Matt Holliday a story about Matt Holliday hitting his home run for a sick kid. And I think Holliday was kind of surprised that he knew it, because Holliday was kind of sitting there nodding his head and almost kind of starting to choke up a little bit because Danny Mac all of a sudden just remembered this. And I think that's a sign of how he's aging gracefully into this play-by-play calling, is that he's connecting with players and fans alike.
I will say, as I'm kind of scrolling through Facebook here, I do notice that Fox Sports World West has a clip up that says Mark Reynolds helps get to the bottom of Cupgate. Now, obviously, I can't watch this while we're playing, while we're talking here, but watch it afterwards. Maybe there's a confession there. It doesn't seem like it.
Could be a confession.
Looking at the comments, it looks like there's still some idea that it's who it is. So we'll see. I don't know what that is. Maybe it's a little misdirection, something to look forward to.
Could be.
we have done what we can do, I think, with this. And most people, well, most people are gone. You know,
they're gone.
Like, hey, you know, 45 minutes.
This
we're gone,
is
hey,
it.
You know, it's just too bad. They missed all the good stuff about, you know, the cups and things
and
like
cups
that.
Cups so, and Mark Reynolds' beard and the way that Jaime Garcia can trim it. And it's just, I mean, all that stuff, you're not going to get on ESPN radio or, you know, or MLB Network. You're just not going to hear that kind of analysis, people.
No, because ESPN radio is too busy with football. So
that's right, yeah.
To be
it's
fair,
over
that's,
now.
That's what they do all summer long and all fall and all winter. So, you know, that's you know. But I got to say, I have not watched a lot of MLB Network lately. But I did watch some, and I saw that they've got, you know, what, Russo, the Mad Dog guy, as like an analyst, you know, like doing stuff around the big desk instead of his own little show. It was nice to have his own little show because you could ignore that. You know, now you've got him in here, and somebody else on Twitter said they've got, you know, Kevin Millar and Chris Rose doing those kind of things. And those are kind of guys, okay, Russo I wouldn't watch anyway. Millar and Rose I could watch sometimes on their show because it's informal. But when I want to watch the game, these are not the guys I want to see talking about highlights and things like that. I mean,
I
think MLB Network is starting to dumb down to the common denominator, and I don't think it needs to.
No, it's actually, I mean, they're kind of place that we go to for a little bit above average analysis, if anything. I mean, I like listening to Greg Amzingernie. He's a St. Louis guy, and, you know, Harry Reynolds will have his craziness, but for the most part, they have guys on there that have played the game, and they give you some good analysis, and they give you all the highlights. They don't skip over anything. But yeah, I mean, the fact that they're shuffling their lineup and trying to become more accessible, maybe instead of just staying who they are, which is a very stout MLB Network that people really grown to love. I don't see why they need to do that, and it's kind of alarming.
Yeah, and hopefully they won't continue down that path. But again, you just never know. All right, we'll be at it again next week. The Cardinals, like I said, they finish up with the Marlins. Then what do they do? I can't see my schedule from here. They got San Francisco to finish, then they get a day off, and then they have that West Coast trip that they start with the Padres. So maybe, I don't know if we'll record next Thursday on the off day or next Friday when they're playing. If we record next Friday, we'll be doing it as the game goes along with those West Coast late starts. But anyway, it'll be an interesting week to see. But then again, they're always interesting weeks. So, for Dan, I'm Daniel. We'll talk at you next week.
Thanks for listening to The Best Dans in Baseball. We'd love to have your feedback on the show. Email us at bestdansinbaseball@gmail.com. Dan Buffa can be found on Twitter at Buffa82, Daniel Shoptaw at C70. The show's Twitter handle is bestdan, BASEBAL1. You can also find us on Facebook under Best Dans in Baseball.